All right, it is in fact 10 a.m., so I will call this meeting to order. This is the regular scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting for Tuesday, November 28, 2017. Before we go to the pledge, a couple of housekeeping items on the agenda. One, Margaret James will not present us today. That will be at a later date. And two, I'd like to move Darren Moon's update for bridge options for 280th Street Bridge over the Skunk River up in our agenda to immediately after our Healthy Life Center update, simply because we have the city manager of Ames here at this point, and it's worth it for him to hear this conversation. So unless there are objections, we'll make those two changes. And hearing none, everybody please join the board as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, thank you again, and good morning. First item on our agenda, as always, is public comment number one. It's an opportunity for members of the public to address items on today's agenda, or really anything. Is there anybody wishing to do so? Please come right up to the microphone. And seeing no one moving to the microphone, we'll move right to a Healthy Life Center update from steering committee members. And Nancy, I'm going to look to you to kick us off on this, because I know you have been a driving force in this conversation. This is the first time that I'm aware of that this board has had an opportunity to sit down and visit it. We had the full meeting of elected officials probably a year ago or so, and Deb has been serving on the steering committee just to make sure the county was at least aware of the conversations that were going on. But this is our first chance to hear from you, so welcome. Good morning.
Well, thank you very much. And Ryan Dieter is here with us, Keith Abraham and Steve Shanker, and Deb Shildrock, which we're all members of the Healthy Life Center steering team. And we appreciate the opportunity to come over. And we know it's an update because you were all engaged in the, well, I guess not all formally, but Rick, I guess you were back on November 1 of a year ago now. And so the presentation hasn't changed dramatically, but we've got a lot more details. And I think that's why we came today. The City of Ames has been the funder of about a $100,000 feasibility study that started this past August. It will be concluding at the end of this calendar year, maybe into the first of the year. We will then do what we did last November 1. We will have approximately 45 people gather again, and the consultants will come back and do the final report out. We're anticipating that meeting to be probably sometime in the mid-January range. So this is an update. It's, and again, a conversation. So if you have questions, anything you want clarified, anything that the consultants could continue to refine that we're missing, now's the time, because again, they are starting to go on the other side of the mountaintop to close up the report. So that's why we thought it was timely to come now, because we are at least a partially through their study. And yet, we thought, too, that just because, Rick, you were the only one that was at the November 1 meeting, it's still good to do the concept so we're all one-minded on what really is the project. I'm going to go through it quickly. If you have questions, please stop me at any time, but otherwise, we'll get your reaction, too, at the end. So here are the major players. We've been meeting, as a reminder, since February of 2016. We've had a few changes. Most recently, we've added, for Iowa State University, Pam Elliott Kane. She's a replacement to Kate Gregory, who left the university mid-November. But as you can see, it continues to be the City of Ames, Mary Greeley, Heartland, Story County, and DMAC.
I'm going to stop you right there, okay, because I am new. But I'd like to really clarify what Deb's role was and find out what directions of the previous board were, because I'm uncomfortable with the word collaboration right now. We've made no decision to enter into this project.
Right.
So I heard team, you know, kind of a team or task force kind of concept, and Deb being the person there as our ears and eyes, so what. But could you clarify what you mean by collaboration? I don't want, yeah.
You bet, great question. Collaboration just in the spirit of that we've all come together since February of 2016 to discuss this concept. And that's why even on the previous slide, if I can get it back, It's Healthy Life Center concept. So I think you have to start with the very first slide. Sorry, it's a great question, Loris, that it's a concept only, that if we didn't, though, have people that we felt were potential partners, if you will, in the need, in the idea, coming together as collaborators, then we wouldn't be able to even move the concept forward. And I think the most important part, really, for the very first many months, it was just a toll discussion. And until the city funded the Healthy Life Center feasibility study, and still, that's the data that we've all said since day one we needed. You know, we can all have a lot of great ideas in life, but until you put the pencil to the paper and say, here is how it's going to work, here's who's going to be the tenants, how is that going to be financially dealt with, what's the responsibility to even be a tenant, and that's Mary Greeley and Heartland. The City of Ames right now is just proposing they would own and manage it. But Brian and Steve, and that's why they're here today, and they could speak to it better than me, but last November 1, they stood before those 45 people and said, we want you to all understand, though we are very supportive of this as leaders of our entities, as the CEOs, there's no commitments made. Mm-hmm. And this is still just a concept. And yet, though they as leaders may make recommendations to their governing bodies, same as Deb coming and being informed, she can come back and keep you apprised. And that's, I know she's been doing an awesome job of that. Right. No decisions have been made.
Okay,
that's important. Deb has done a phenomenal job.
Yeah,
Story
and we know
County
that.
Committed early and is committed today to being part of the conversation, part of the concept. None of that changed with the election of different people up here. And let's just be really clear. There's one entity who has been part of the conversations that's not anymore, and that's Ames School System.
That's correct.
And the Board of Supervisors could, if you find two votes, could determine that we aren't going to be part of the conversation. We are today, and that's the way I see it going forward.
Very good. Just to give you, set context, why is this important to us to have a healthy life center? Childhood obesity has skyrocketed, and we all know why. The kids on the picture on the right are a good example. They're sitting home more or less playing video games than being active like a lot of kids used to be in the previous decades. And it's a big concern that, again, health care and rising health care costs, we need to change the mindset of kids and get them busy. Chronic disease management, paramount again. So much of our health care costs are related to people in conditions such as heart disease and cancer and diabetes. And lots of times these are preventable, but you have to get active and you have to do something. You need to move and eat well and have social connections, because all of that can add to a lot of chronic disease issues when you're depressed and isolated. I think one of the interesting bullets on this is that half of Americans live with some form of a chronic condition, and 3/4 of our health care dollars go to treating chronic diseases. So it's a crisis, I think it's fair to say, in America, and we're trying to be proactive. We've got a whole new day now with baby boomers that I think we're all excited about. They're a huge group coming, as we all know. In Iowa, 750,000 boomers are here. That's one in every four residents. And they have a tremendous impact on our health care costs also. And the good news is, though, there's a trend with boomers, just their mindset is, they want to age well. And so that's to our advantage. So what does that mean when we say they want to age well? They want to stay active. They're health conscious. And that's where it needs to start. They are lifelong learners. They want to give back. They want to participate and be mentors. And one of the most, I think, is an interesting thing is they don't want to be in a senior center, and they don't want to be known as seniors. So with that, that's one of the exciting things about the Healthy Life Center. One of our main emphasis is that it will be intergenerational and for all socioeconomic status. Which also ties us in another thing that's so central to not only Ames, this is the City of Ames initiative, hashtag always Ames. We do want to attract the young and the vibrant workers. When we look at Research Park, I mean, there's thousands of jobs being proposed for that area of Ames, but yet the impact of Story County in its totality will be dramatic. And we need to have things like Healthy Life Center from a quality of life,
when you're out of work, your family, all of those things are really important. So it is the initiative for the Always Ames is they do want to attract young adults transitioning into family life to the community, and you need quality of life facilities to do that. And you want to we also want to recruit and retain the best and the brightest. And I know Brian can speak to that. So I've heard him say it, that when they bring in doctors and other staff to Mary Greeley, that's what they're looking for. And they're shopping other university communities, too, that they can be competitive with Ames. So we have to have these kind of things, not just for Mary Greeley, City of Ames, Story County, Iowa State University the competition to get the best and the brightest in our workforce. So with that being kind of the baseline of the reasons why, this is the purpose statement that every month when we meet, we always refer to this because it is our North Star, that the purpose is to provide a one-of-a-kind center that makes the lifelong goal of healthy living accessible and enjoyable to people of all ages and socioeconomic status. We've kind of gotten it down, though, as a summation of what are the key drivers then that support a healthy life center. It is to enhance the quality of life facilities to attract and retain millennials, families, and retirees. That we do want to tackle, though, and go after and be proactive about the health statistics that I just reviewed. And we do, thank goodness, and it's to be celebrated, that we have a tremendously great history of successful partnerships between all of our governmental entities. A lot of places don't, and it's something that is unique to Ames and Story County. And then we do have, and hopefully some of you have followed this over the last many years, but there has been the state level, the Healthiest Iowa initiative to try to raise Iowa from being one of the unhealthiest states to one of the higher ranking, and we've made some good inroads in that. Healthiest Ames has been a force for probably the last almost 7 to 8 years, and is now being recognized from the state of Iowa as a benchmark community of how other Iowa communities could also do things with volunteers to make a difference in the health and well-being of their community. So the bubble on the right, I'll bring it up a little bit bigger. This now, again, is kind of a graphic that's a snapshot of what a healthy life center really means. And when you look at all those collaboration partners, the conversation, well, how do we all fit into that mix? Well, the three bubbles in the center that we believe are central to making a healthy life center, not a rec center, okay, are you have to have physical activities, you have to have health and nutrition offerings, and then social networking in all of those spheres. And the outer ring then speaks to education and the applied student learning component, and that's the DMAC and the Iowa State University elements. When you think about it, we'll show you here in some pictures in a second, when DMAC students and Iowa State students have the opportunity to come into these three spheres and make their learning applicable, it really is an exciting opportunity for both because there's so much energy and education that can be brought from the walls of university into the Healthy Life Center. When it all comes together, the ultimate goal is we do want people to live well and be well. So here are just some of the features. These are pulled off the internet. Once the consultants have finished their study, there will be more pictures that would look more true. But you can see this is the warm water recreational basin. Rick mentioned it. The school district, to their choosing, wanted their cold water competitive basin located at Ames High, and they are moving forward now in that regard. The city of Ames wants a warm water recreational basin, again, for that intergenerational little ones to older adults. When we talk about like the bottom left slide, you got to start to connect the comments here, if you will. That purple slide looks, well, that's really fun, right? And it is. And that's what gets kids from home and doing the video games to say, hey, let's go to the aquatic center because it is fun. And you got to climb steps to go down. So again, that activity is central. The bottom right is the current channel. And one of the biggest features that has been, I think, a surprise of how much the residents of Story County have all enjoyed it is the Lazy River at the Furman Aquatic Center. We thought that was going to be an add-on, that people could walk against the current, but it has been one of the shining stars of the whole facility. Again, all ages, and the indoor facility would also have a current channel. Therapy pool, it would be, again, this is a Mary Greeley important piece, but it also is for the whole community at large. So it would be used for rehabilitation, but also aqua exercise classes for all ages has really increased. And that's a very exciting thing. Swim lessons could be held in it, and tiny tot classes, because it's a little bit warmer temperature than even the other basins are. Mary Greeley's contemplating bringing physical therapy. And you can see there again, that's another great moment for applied student learning, when you can think about the kinesiology students coming over and working. But yet it doesn't just end in what would be a defined physical therapy space. All of us need to continue after you've done your physical therapy. What's the next thing you need to do? Well, you need to maybe get into a fitness class or a water walking class so that you continue to rehab successfully. And you'll see here there's some other features coming up, like a track, that it's just always progressive in nature. The City of Ames would be, though, the programmatic driver in the entire facility. You'll see that Heartland's going to be located within the complex, but that would be for our adult day center and office space. Older adults that we serve as Heartland, 60 and above, would transition into Parks and Recreation facilitated programs. We, though, at Heartland always are worried about the ones, again, that maybe can't financially afford to participate, as is the City of Ames, too, for all ages. I mean, there's children, obviously, that can't afford to participate. So we've historically always had scholarships, but yet it's done quietly, because you don't want to be known and tagged as someone that, again, that doesn't have the economic capacity to participate equally to everyone else. So no one will ever be turned away. But that is how then, again, efficiency and effectiveness is you don't duplicate your programming. So the Parks and Recreation will take the lead in that. Gymnasiums, two are being proposed. Pickleball, badminton, a lot of that older adult activities would happen during the day. Boom, though, it's starting from 3 o'clock on until probably 10 o'clock at night. All ages, again, drop-in activities, sport leagues for all ages.
I have a question. I think it's for Keith. Okay. I remember a few years ago concern that we had sports teams even playing at various locations around the City of Ames, playing at 9 and 10 o'clock at night. Is that still the situation that there's really no rec space sometimes, or is the demand?
We still have that happen. Our adult volleyball leagues will start at 7 o'clock and finish up a little after 10. Adult basketball is really when we can get into the facilities. So we do still have that situation.
Okay, thanks.
One of the exciting things, and this is kind of that Steve could address this better, but it kind of intersects, I think, at this point with that question, Loris. And it's been in the Ames Tribune, so you may have read it, that part of this conversation with the Ames Community School District going with the cold water pool at Ames High is that still will be seen as a community resource. And Steve, again, will be recommending to his governing body that the city potentially contribute up to $25,000 a year just towards the operations of that cold water basin so that everyone can utilize it. In addition, there could be a conversation that he's suggesting that would also open up the five elementary school gymnasiums that are regulation-sized courts. And if that agreement can be realized, that will be huge, because there's five more regulation-sized gyms. You add two here. It really, I think, could change the landscape of how we deal with a lot of programs and get people more active and in their own neighborhoods, too, with those elementary school gyms. Here's the track. As you can see, it would be for walking and jogging.
I thought you were going to say, because I can jog. I'm a big jogger.
You were a big jogger. That was the walking piece. Exercise, multi-purpose rooms, cardio, open space. This is an example that I don't know how many of you know. This person on the bike is Sue Woos, and Sue was in a research project that's with Iowa State students who is kneeling down. And this is another great example of how this applied student learning education piece comes to life. Every day, Iowa State University is doing things in gerontology, kinesiology with children that they need people access easily to do research on. And it doesn't always have to be a fancy research project that's $1 million thing. It can many times just be we need 100 people of this age category. And the professors at Iowa State don't have quick access to those folks, where we do, and we have the base that we can pull quickly together. So this is just a real example of that happening. We talked about the social component. Social isolation is a big deal. And it's not just for the elderly. It's all ages. We're all getting to be more at home, doing our computer stuff, and it's damaging to ourselves emotionally. So we do want a nice cafe lobby. This is not a good picture of what it will be when the consultants come back with a conceptual drawing. It'll be an open atrium more. There'll probably be a fireplace. Now, we can say, well, is that over the top? We would say, no, it's not, because you do want something that's inviting, and you get a cup of coffee and eat in a healthy way, but make friends. Because if you do, when you're sitting there socially, the next thing we're going to try to get people to do is to maybe say, hey, let's go walk around the track. Hey, maybe we could sign up for a chronic disease management, how to cook and eat better. So you need to make friends first to ensure you stay in the game long term.
Nancy, is one of the things that I think we missed on as a state when we took our what was a congregate meal program for seniors and changed it from what was, at that point anyway, more of a social opportunity to a nutrition opportunity. And you've experienced firsthand kind of how that's dwindled to the point now where it's really not, there's no social component.
That's right. That's right. Well said, Rick. And that's why I think we need a different model in how we move forward, because the baby boomers in particular have a whole different mindset of what it means now to be active than sitting in a meal situation versus being able to go out and do other activities. There would be child care. This is drop-in only, not child care like you can go to work then. Now we're back to, again, an all-inclusive playground for children. And this is important. Again, connect back. The obesity issue, you got to have something fun to get all the ages active and doing something. Arts and crafts. That's, again, what makes it more of a healthy life center, not a rec center. We're doing music and arts and crafts. Connecting, again, though, the baby boomer idea, there are a lot of kids that need mentoring, and there's a lot of people in Story County that have a lot of expertise that could teach these classes and volunteer and give back. So there's a lot going on in multiple ways here.
Has the Octagon been brought to the table on that at all?
Not officially. We've had a lot of informal conversations with YSS, Boys and Girls Club, ChildServe. Okay, the Octagon is one of the key that I have talked about, because that's the programmatic piece. If we get the features pretty well what we need, then you start to bring in those conversations later to say, now, how could this space really come to life? None of us need to be the programmer of everything, and that's a strength that Parks and Recreation has had for many years and continues with Keith's leadership to this day, that we always are looking for who's an expert in this and how can we, again, partner to make it to be the best it can be at the most economic price. Meeting room, we're talking right now, Heartland space would have an approximate meeting room space for 25 people, because we also want to leverage what can happen when Heartland leaves at approximately 5:30 every day. Who could come in and use that space after 5:30? So YSS is an example, could be a user for that space. And then go out into the Healthy Life Center for programmatic opportunities. But the entire complex would have a meeting room. We're forecasting for maybe close to 200, because meeting room space is always central to all of us and having, again, that social component met. But it would have dividers so you could use it and be flexible. Here's Heartland. I've already mentioned it. Our adult day center would be there. We'll be able to accommodate up to ultimately 50 people as growth increases in the years to come.
Roughly how much space are you thinking of mentally? I know this is a concept, but for Heartland Services itself, roughly are you thinking?
Yeah, roughly I think it's about 12,000 square feet. And with flexibility, we've been located on an exterior wall, as have right now the conceptual drawings, so is one of the gymnasium walls. So if we ever wanted to bump it out, because this facility, realistically, will probably be here a minimum, I'm going to suggest, 75 years.
And what is your existing space?
Probably, well, if we're just doing the adult day center space, because now we'd be limited to just that, right. It's probably, maybe 6,000.
Okay.
So significantly increased with the ability to expand. They're forecasting with the baby boomers coming, 1 in 3 of us will have some form of dementia. So it's going to be just a really, really difficult situation within the next 20 to 30 years as they really come into that age category. The participation kitchen, you know, we've kind of done the bubble of the physical activity. We talked about the social. Let's do the demonstration participation kitchen. There's a doctor now out in Boston, I believe, that is saying instead of writing prescriptions, she's trying to write recipes. And then she has a kitchen that's adjacent to her office practice, and she takes kids and families, all ages, and they go over and they learn how to cook healthy. And it's from drinks they drink to actual meals. So that's what we're envisioning here.
And I read that, so I was interested, I think, in that article, if we're thinking of the same one, that when I first saw what she was doing, I figured her specialty was geriatrics, and she was working. But no, she's more of a family practice trying to make sure that families are eating healthier.
That's right. And again, because of what we've already seen on the slides, this childhood obesity thing, you've got to teach people just new behaviors and habits. Well, how do we do that? So, again, this is, I think, a great demonstration of that. We have a participation kitchen. And if you think about what all of us have gone to the state fair and you see a person up there being the expert and they got a mirror above them and you're sitting out in chairs like this watching, there's no fun in that. You're not making any relationships. In contrast, there's maybe 4 to 5 islands. And DMAC students from the culinary arts program might be the instructors of this, or Iowa State students. It could be millennials that are learning how to do gourmet cooking and how to pair it with the correct wine. For young moms, it could be, and dads, how do you come in with produce that's grown out in the community gardens adjacent to the Healthy Life Center? How do you bring that in and cook now economically but healthy? Older adults, it could be, how do you learn to cook for one? But the social component cannot be lost in this. If you don't make people build relationships, they'll come one time for a class, they won't return. So you have to build the relationship piece. So that's central to this entire project in everything we're doing. So we're closing down now with the presentation, what it is and what it isn't. It's not a recreation center for the bottom right graphic. It is the whole person. And then again, wrapping in the educational and the applied student learning makes it, we believe, that it will be a one-of-a-kind facility, that it is a holistic approach. We do focus on health promotion, physical, social, and then long-term, hopefully, health impacts. And we are starting to teach some new behaviors in nutrition and that it is multi-generational. Losing my... Iowa State University has committed, they cannot legally do it. It has to be informal up until the point they can't strap the Board of Regents with a formal decision yet. But we have a letter that the city has received back from Miles Lackey that the Board of Regents are aware of the project and subject to it all coming together, they have indicated that they would part with the land that's approximately 10 acres out on Shoal Road in Ontario, and the Applied Science Center sits back behind it. So here's kind of a closer look at it. This is, again, very conceptual. When we've seen just preliminary drawings from the architects, it will fill the site with parking and the complex itself, and a little bit of opportunity to add on, as we've mentioned. We don't want to be landlocked right off the bat. There also has to be water retention ponds and those things to deal with water runoff. So that's the concept. Any questions for any of us, and Deb included, that we can react to or respond to? Because I do have one other segment that I want to touch upon. Any other questions?
So I start, Deb. You participated in these conversations from a county perspective as you've been listening to it. Any thoughts?
I think it dovetails with the involvement the county has had with the asset agencies. As Nancy mentioned, Heartland would be an agency that's located at this particular site, but there have been discussions with YSS, Boys and Girls Club, Child Serve, and others who'd want to use this location for programmatic purposes, and I think that does match with what the county's been involved with the asset services and agencies, and I think that could probably grow over time as well as this concept catches on. And I think it does also align with the county's involvement with other kinds of projects over the years, and I've done a little bit of research with the help of the auditor's office on what those kinds of projects have been. I mean, we've had the bike path that's south of Nevada, the recreation or the facility up in Story City that Mary Greeley is a part of. But there have just been various projects that the county has participated in. This one, of course, is a little bit different than those and much, much larger, but nonetheless.
I counted. I think Nancy said one of a kind six different times. And I think that's a fair, it's one of a kind for all of us thinking about this concept.
And people said, well, why is it one of a kind? And the steering team has really come down to that when you can have the collaboration partners we brought together, that makes it one of a kind. We have searched America over, and we can't find six collaboration partners that are being suggested. You can find two or three many times, but not six. And that is what really makes it one of a kind. I do have just a couple other comments.
Yeah, let's see if Laura Samardi has questions before you get to that.
I want to follow up with what Deb said. Okay, from the asset process standpoint, we usually fund fee-for-service via asset, okay? So where do you think, Deb, this would go? Would this continue to be, with other asset partners involved, we would be giving additional money so that they could pay for their service populations to attend? Mm-hmm. Would it be a slight, fee scale to help buy down their memberships? Or, what do you see as far as that goes?
I think with asset being tied to human service organizations and nonprofits, we would continue down the path of, in the case of Heartland Senior Services, this would be brand new space for them, much larger space, so I would expect that their overhead costs would rise and their rates that we reimburse them at for adult day service and outreach and service coordination, those kinds of rates would rise a little bit. I don't see through the asset process going out and above paying for memberships, so to speak. I mean, I think because of the way that asset's structured and how it's so tightly woven with human services.
Okay.
Now, that's not to say that the county and the other funders, can talk about what other kinds of fee structures could be put into place or funds could be provided to help with memberships or passes or that kind of service.
I think it's a great question by Laura, and I just want to underscore this and see, Nancy, all of you, if you agree with this. So I'm viewing this as there's kind of three separate silos that have to be worked on to get to the end of this. And the first one is conceptually, do we need it? If we need it, what's it look like? And clearly, City of Ames stepped up to fund that, and we're going to get to the end of that portion. Then there becomes the cost of actually constructing it. That's outside of asset process or anything else. That is figuring out where the dollars are going to come from to construct a facility like this. And then finally, and just as importantly that I think people lose sight of, is the ongoing operation of it. And Laura, that's where I think you hit right to the heart of it, but that's just one of three components that I think it takes to get all the way to the end. You think that's a fair assessment of where we are today? Okay. Marty, questions?
Housekeeping. Laura, you're okay. Are you looking for us to disengage from this dialogue as a contributing partner?
No, I'm not looking to disengage. I just, me, I like clarity. I get down into the weeds sometimes.
Are you okay with Deb continuing her capacity to be at the table?
Yes.
And consume our...
I'm fine with that. I have the same concerns like, we all three when it comes to budget time, right? Where does money come from? We've seen a lot of asks lately, and then we've all got kind of our priorities of service ourselves. And so, but no, I love it. I mean, I think it's wonderful. Nancy, having followed you when you were in Parks and Rec before, I watched you bring two projects of different size to a successful fruition, from concept to fruition, the dog park, which was on a real small level, and then the Furman Aquatic Center. And I know your enthusiasm for it and your detail. And I definitely think it's wonderful. It's how do we pay for it?
I would say to the City of Ames, I think you just spent $100,000 well and wisely. And I applaud you the fact that you did the outreach, because I don't disagree with the fact that you bring many people to the table as partners, contributors, idea people, organizations. You give yourself the opportunity to expand. That's well thought out. I'm glad to see Iowa State was willing to part with some, or some land. That is a precious thing. We just had this conversation, being the non-Ames person in the conversation, watched as we were moving the project through Nevada cooperatively through the school and the city, and it's now on the tracks moving to fall of 2019 completion. I think that we watched how the pool component was going to work out, because clearly the school had needs that were counter to what this facility would have, and it looks like you found success in both areas. I applaud Ames, great, very good. I like the fact that Nancy, we have the hard copies of your presentation, but clearly you filled in very well. You know this story quite well, and there's been a lot of thought on a run up to this. I would like to think that on a going forward basis, this is something I can see where this has a county presence to it. Mm-hmm. And if that means that we are furthering our part of the discussion, I welcome that, and I see what 2018, 2019 bring. So I'm glad to hear that you wanted to keep things as they are. Glad that you're comfortable with Deb being part of that conversation.
Absolutely.
Because she has that ability to be at the table and keep us apprised as need be. Right. And
I
look forward to what the rest of her presentation is.
Yeah, and you guys are all great too. I meant to say it too.
Good. All right, Nancy.
In bringing it to closure, the preliminary numbers right now that we're seeing when the consultants came back in November indicated that approximately usage now will total about 57% from residents of Ames, approximately 30% from Greater Story County, and 13% even beyond the Story County boundaries. And so that kind of kicks us in, of course, that we're excited about that. We didn't know what percentage it would be. And so 30% from Greater Story County was very encouraging to us, and the concept, again, that people are going to be excited about coming there. And I think we have to remember that this facility is unique in that it will have the only, within Story County, warm water recreational pool. And, you know, we have our summer ones that Nevada has, Ames, of course, Boone, but not an indoor warm water. So, and the track, I think that's another feature that people will really celebrate, and it will be a draw from the boundaries of Greater Story County. We're looking roughly, to go to your question, Rick, which I think was spot on, and Loris, of the money. The consultants will come back at the joint meeting in January and know the facts, so this is still premature, but their indications right now are looking at roughly we can have a gap after the City of Ames is what we're looking at for contribution, Mary Greeley Heartlands, tenant space, roughly a $20 million gap still, okay? Operationally, we don't know yet the bottom line, but we're looking at maybe $500,000 to $600,000. Okay, so that is, again, with that 30% countywide usage, we sure appreciate your giving consideration, and that's why we wanted to come down in November, not wait until mid-January, because we know everyone's in the budget process right now, and we just want to pepper you with that idea that, again, that kind of usage is anticipated, and yet those kind of dollars, both operationally and capital.
So I think completely appropriate that you guys came today, and so appreciative that you would put this together and we could have the full conversation and get some more clarity on what Story County's role, at least in the short term, is going to be as we move into getting the consultant's report and then seeing, I mean, for all six entities, Nancy, there's a reason, and you know this, there's a reason that this doesn't happen, that you can't pull six entities like this together to get it done. Doesn't mean we can't do it. It just means we've got to keep taking it one step at a time and try to get there.
That's right.
So, thank you so much. Loris, Marty, anything else?
I feel informed, and I would like to hope that the paper takes up the cause and pushes it out, too.
Okay. Thank you.
Good. Yeah. All right. Thanks, everybody. So, now is the point where we're going to pull Darren Moon up. He was listed late in the agenda.
Yeah.
And, Darren, we're going to talk about the bridge for 280th. Over the Scott River. The reason it is pertinent to pulling up now is we basically have one entity that we serve with this bridge, and it's the City of Ames and one of their facilities. So, Darren, go back. So you gave a very quick update to this board a couple weeks ago, and we asked you to come back with a more formal presentation. But go ahead and just update us on how we got here.
Like I said, we're still at the update stage for the board. Like 2 weeks ago, I updated you very quickly with the brief information on that. It was recently closed due to some damage, which we assumed was caused by loading. You want a little more information, so that's what I put together here for you. This is the 280th Street Bridge down south over the Skunk River. It was built in 1929, so it's getting some age to it. It's a 184-foot long steel truss bridge. It was reconstructed in 1974. We don't have information on what was done, but I assume a new wood deck was put on it, and it was painted green to protect the steel. I assume that all happened in 74. At this point, both abutments need repair. We knew one abutment on the west side needed some repair from the bridge inspection report last year, but it's the east abutment that we had the damage to right now. And a lot of the wood decking is starting to fail. We estimated 10 to 15 year life right now if it was repaired. We were hoping to get that 10 to 15 years without doing anything, so this was a surprise to us, so we had nothing in our plans to do anything in the short term to this bridge. Again, this is what we were asked. The city called and said the bridge dropped, and that corner dropped about 6 inches, so we went out to look at it. I don't have my laser pointer, but you can see the 12 by 12 inch wood cap on the right there is tilted up. That's because it completely split, and the bridge, it's easier to see in this picture on the right-hand side there where the cap actually split. Fortunately, the ground was high there, so it had something to fall to. Otherwise, we could have had a complete collapse on the bridge. Most of our bridges are up 10 feet high, so could have had a collapse, unfortunately, there, but it did hit the ground. You can see some of the deterioration in the wood deck up at the top there. The ends of the wood starting to rot with the holes in it and the side there. And as I pointed out last time, the bridge abutment is really steep. It's more than a one-to-one slope there. It's really steep. So the one repair option we're looking at is to drive some steel pile down just to brace the one corner where it's bearing. There's probably riprap and stuff in there. We don't know what we're going to hit when you drive a steel pile, so it could require a lot of excavation, and then it has to be put back at that same slope. We can't obstruct the stream anymore because it's in a detailed flood insurance study area, and we require a DNR permit anyway, whatever we do. So that is a concern with the repair. This is the west side of the bridge that had already been repaired. You can't see it. It's under the grass, but it had a similar steel pile repair that we're talking about doing on the east side. They put a wood cap on top of the steel. I'm not sure why they did that or when this even happened. That might have been this could have taken place in 74 as well, but you can see the wood cap is completely split and rotten. This has actually collapsed as well, but they had the steel underneath to catch it. Where the east side does not have that. This picture shows it. This is the other side of the bridge. You can see the steel I-beam sticking out there. So there's steel piling driven into the ground on both ends, and it's bridged with that steel I-beam. So that would be the type of repair we're talking about on the other side, but it's more difficult because this had a lot of dirt slope and embankment to it that we had to work with. The other side doesn't have that. So we met with our bridge consultant out there for a second opinion, one that they agreed the bridge needed to be closed right now. And they put some repair cost estimates together, which would include some design. It will take some structural analysis to put the design together. And then because of the costs they're coming up with, their estimate was $80,000 to $90,000. We would have to let this competitively, so it would take a set of plans to let it.
So this wouldn't be able to be done until 18 at some point?
If we're talking repair, best case scenario, I mean, they could probably have plans done in a couple months, another month to let it and to advertise a letting. And then, so 3 to 4 months out for letting. A repair like this is not good to do in the summer because it'd take a crane. Those cranes are usually busy during the summer. This is more winter work for them to do something when they're not busy building new bridges. So we might not get good bids if we do this in the summer. So it'd probably be next winter work, more than likely. But we could try to push it as quick as we could. But I would say best case scenario would be 6 months from now doing repair work.
Remind us landowners in the area and how they access their fields. How many landowners do we have that have?
I'll get to that here real quick.
Yep.
This is some pictures of the decking starting to go bad. This is right in the center of the bridge. It's hard to tell there, but there's about a 2-foot by 4-foot settlement there where the deck has gone bad that needs to be repaired right now. Bridge posting, as far as I can tell, the bridge has been posted forever. It's just that was the design of the original bridge. It couldn't take loads even from the start. So it's, I found in this 1970s bridge inspection report, it was the same posting. So the top posting is 18 tons. That's for like a straight truck. And that's about the posting range we use for our mortar graders. I wanted to point that out because we had just started analyzing our bridges for, our mortar graders keep getting heavier all the time. They get bigger. We're just getting to the point where this bridge is getting not strong enough to hold our mortar graders even. So we're about to the point we're going to call the mortar graders off and have to find another way to maintain to the west of this bridge. But then this happened. And the second posting on there is the grain semi. That's where I say I've seen them go over this bridge in the past year or two, fully loaded. They're over 40 tons. They have to be. So, and it's posted 27 tons for that type of truck. So that's another concern for me. If we repair this bridge, it'll still have the same posting. And I can't enforce loads that go over it. I can report them to the sheriff or the DOT. The sheriff doesn't have the scales to weigh trucks and stuff, so it's more of a DOT issue. The enforcement, we call them the Blue Boys, come out. We call them. We can't force them to come out, so we're kind of at their mercy if they want to come out and enforce it or not. So I think I have called them in the past to come out and check this bridge out at times, and I don't know if they have or not. They don't report back to us, so that is an option. That's a picture of the bridge, two spans. Like I said, this is some text from our bridge inspection that was done last winter. The last couple lines of the paragraph, it shows the east abutment piles are starting to rot, and abutment cap is crushed under southwest bearing and rotting at the southeast end. So we knew the southwest was already crushed and the southeast was starting to rot, it said. But that usually starts on the outside and works its way in, and then it splits somewhere in the middle. So we weren't expecting that to happen so quickly. And they recommended already that we perform repairs to the southwest abutment cap. That's not the one that got damaged. So we're already looking at repairs from their recommendations. Getting to the landowner issues here, let me go down a few here. The blue highlighted ones are the land the city of Ames owns. Excuse me, a pointer up here. It's hard for me to point it out. But you can see the Skunk River at the angle there, and the bridge is right in the middle of the Skunk River there off to the right of the blue highlighted. So the blue highlighted squares are the property the city of Ames currently owns. So the rest of it, highlighted here, are the privately owned parcels that need to use this bridge for access. And this adds in some of the property owners' names. At the far top, it's a little hard to read. It's a trust from Illinois. The next one down is Ryerson's, but that's just a little corner that falls on the west side of the Skunk River, and he has planted that all in new trees, so I don't expect him to do any ag work in that area. Below that, it's a Watch Warren Trust from Missouri. And then below that is Buellen Trust. And that is I know Betty Buellen is local from Cambridge. I believe Wright's farm that ground. And then there's like three parcels to the south there that aren't farmed, but they are privately owned. And they have some currently are landlocked already. So I don't know how they access their property currently. Estimate a privately owned farm ground is 300 to 400 acres. So if you put a value to that, $5,000 an acre, you're talking $2 million.
$5,000?
Yeah. This is floodplain ground. That's why I put the 5 on it.
Okay.
Yeah, we're closer to 10.
You have a farm sale. You would be very
good farm ground, yeah. Probably a low estimate.
Yeah.
And this kind of highlights that point. You can see the white road up at the top, but just to the east of the interstate there. That's still county portion, the north-south white gravel road. But where you see that blue triangle, that's where the City of Ames private road begins. And then it heads off to the east and curves back to the south. This is where we kind of get into. I met with the city water plant staff yesterday to get. They gave me a quick history lesson on this. It's stuff I did not know about till yesterday. When the water plant went in just north of here back in the mid-'80s, apparently there was a request to the county to replace the bridge over the Skunk River at that time. I think from just guessing from the county standpoint, they figured they had another 40, 50 years of life left in that bridge, so they weren't interested, is what they're telling me, to participate at that time. And I don't know if the city offered to put up any money for the bridge at the time. They weren't sure of that. But apparently the county was not interested in participating, so the county had, or the city had to build that private road to get access to the large equipment that was going to take to build that facility. Large cranes could not go over that bridge as it currently stood over the Skunk. So the city had to build a fairly large box culvert. You can't see it, but it's a little bit where that box out area is right in the center of the screen. There's a about a 60 to 70 foot long box culvert, so it's a substantial box culvert they had to build at the time to get access with the heavy loads up to build the facility. And just from history there, they indicated that because that happened, it didn't sound like they'd be very willing to work with us on using this as a future access where maybe the county could take it over maintenance and use this as access for all the farmland as well. Did not sound very interested in going that route.
So right.
They said they'd work with us in the meantime because these farmers next spring are going to need access to plant. They said, yeah, they work with us on the short term to get that done, but long term might be a little bit more difficult discussion to have on the county taking over that road. Just a quick screen on our bridge funds. If we wanted to replace the Skunk River Bridge, but just the rough estimate we had was $1 to $1.5 million to replace that bridge. On the far right is our BRS money. That's our federal bridge money, and that's really our main funding stream for bridges of this size. We are, the $400,000 under the BRS column is for the Sand Hill Trail Bridge that we're currently designing and just turning in final plans this month to DOT. So that one really needs to go, and that puts us at a negative $220,000 balance. So beyond that, to build up enough funds for $1.5 million bridge, you know, we're talking 4 or 5 years out, and you can't borrow ahead very far anymore in that fund with the federal fiscal constraint rules. And those three bridges you see at the bottom there would have to be delayed even longer than that, probably about 6 to 8 years out that we were planning on doing next year. So to wrap it up, 280 Street bridge repair, the estimate just to do that southeast corner repair is about $80,000 to $90,000, but there seems to be at least another $50,000 to $100,000 that would need to be repaired if we're even going to get that 10 to 15 year life out of this bridge. So that's something we're going to have to consider. Do we want to, how much money do we want to put in this bridge that we only have 10 years left of?
And just to make sure I understood, and we would still have to load post it.
The load posting would not increase with the repairs, so I still have that concern of the ag traffic still using it. It's one, a safety concern, and two, a bridge damage concern.
Well, so, I mean, if a grain truck can't go over it with the load posting, you know grain trucks are going over it, you know they're going to continue to go over it.
And so what good, I mean, in the great sense of it, is it for the rest of the potential or the likely users? And then we've got the City of Ames who has a private road, but, you know, I appreciate you doing that way back in the 80s. Steve. I guess that was before you came. But
No,
I
was here.
So I had asked last time.
I remember paying for it.
Do you remember? Okay.
They tell me it was almost $3 million, I think, investment in that room.
Wow.
At the time. So we had no choice but to build on it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I had asked before about, from a legal perspective, if there was a likely ability for us to try to determine who actually may have broken our grid, if you will, and whether there was you thought that maybe there would be an ability to recover from them. Did you have an opportunity to talk to the legal department?
Not about that particular. I mean, I know circumstances other counties have had with that. One, you've got to have hard and fast proof of who did it, and we don't have that at this point. And even if you do have that, the vast majority of those have been thrown out by the judges, saying the load posting signs are confusing, and they end up throwing it out. Most of the time you overhear one of those complaints, unless you have some real hard and fast proof that somebody, you know, was really negligent going over that bridge. And I have not heard yet any proof on who did it or...
Okay.
I'm not blaming the city at all, but they also, they bring, when I was out there, there was lime trucks going over that bridge, and I had to stop them. They were going empty at the time. I don't know how they were getting, but they're hauling lime to the facility. I could see the tracks look like they were coming on the private road to get there, but they were coming back over this bridge empty. They're, you know, semi-close to the limits, even empty on this bridge, unfortunately.
Well, I appreciate you providing us more information about that. I think we at least needed to ask.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So four options as I see it, and I don't particularly like any of them, but we could repair the bridge, which we still have the problem we have in terms of loads. We spend $200,000 to repair a bridge. By the time we do all the repairs, $200,000 to repair a bridge that, best case scenario, we get 10 or 15 years out of, and that's if nobody drives over it with something too heavy and we have another problem. Second option is to replace the bridge. Is how many vehicles a day?
I believe it was 60.
Yeah, it gets 60 vehicles a day with alternate access for at least one of the users. But we spend $1.5 million plus to put in a new bridge. Money we don't have that would come from other places. It'd be other bridges. It'd be great if this is the only bridge we had to deal with. We acquire the land in some way, shape, or form, either ownership or by easement, or get it all into natural, except for what Ames owns, which is going to be a greater cost than putting in a bridge, but not a lot greater probably than putting in a bridge, to work with conservation to do all that. Or the final option is to find a way to work with the city of Ames, for the city of Ames to turn their portion that they built, $3 million or whatever it costs you, that they built, but to turn that back into a public county road for us to maintain and go. Again, I don't particularly like any of those options, but that's the only four options that I see in this, unless you guys have something that I'm not seeing.
If we were to spend the $200,000, as you proposed there in your first two bullets, what would that do to our repair and replace schedule for bridges? And your budget?
We have generally about $50,000 a year for bridge repairs. And I think we've only spent about $10,000 of that so far this year. So we'd have at least $40,000 sitting there left this year, and we have to take some of that out of next year's budget. But it's
so this would not
inside the budget.
This would not cause a bridge that we have scheduled, if we were to go to the $200,000 repair, to not be addressed.
If we did the repair, I would. We did the full $200,000, that's starting to, you know, impact something.
I get that, but I'm just saying it wouldn't cause something to fall off.
No, not a new bridge.
Okay.
Different pot of money. I mean, let's just be clear.
I'm just saying.
Different pot of money to repair a bridge than to replace. Yeah.
I'm just, to me, you just do a weighting of your choices, in the sense that the fact that, as you say, if it were only a bridge, it's an easy decision, but clearly it's not, and there's a reason we have bridges around the county that you need to address, and bridges like this jump to the front of the line when things happen.
Question for Steve Shanker, city manager here. Is your culvert, or would it be capable of handling grain, that type of grain traffic, in the event that we would look at that?
Yeah, would have known I wasn't prepared to speak.
And Steve, right. Let's just be clear. I didn't have you here to be able to speak to anything. I wanted you to hear the conversation because coming out of this conversation today, we're going to have a string of conversations about where we're at.
I think it would be an easy solution, except for we prefer not for heavy loaded trucks because we instruct them to go in the back way. But if you ever run to our sewer plant, sanitary sewer plant, mm-hmm. It's a very circuitous route,
right.
Not preferred at all. So we like the bridge route. So mm-hmm. we would like to have that bridge open, not to the truck traffic.
Oh, I get that.
So maybe there's something in there we work together on, you know.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. That's first of all.
Yeah, absolutely.
But the entrance for the normal person, 99% of people use our mm-hmm. plant. And we have a lot of visitors. And will a school bus go across it if you fix it? Is that heavy, too heavy?
If you fix it, it's right about that limit that I wouldn't recommend it.
Certainly, we have to talk about it. But closing down the bridge and just giving you the road doesn't satisfy what we like preference. Is there another deal in there somehow? Perhaps there is.
Darren, go through the timing again. Quickest we could get a repair done, quickest we could get a replacement done.
Best case scenario on repair is about 6 months out. That's if the contractor schedule fits perfectly. Otherwise, it's probably closer to a year. Replacement, it's over 100 square miles, so it takes a DNR permit. That permit alone used to take a year. I've been told, consultants said they're getting better on that. That might be closer to 3 to 6 months now, but that's after it's already designed. So we'd be looking, probably best case scenarios, of letting this time next year, because this is a major project in the DOT's schedule, so it takes a concept statement about right now to get a letting next winter. And then, you know, contractors usually don't start our bridges till the fall, so it could be year and a half, best case scenario, to start construction.
So in the interim, we've got a lot of conversations we need to have, but in the interim, we need to go to work, and it's probably you and Ethan dealing with the appropriate people at Ames on a temporary agreement to allow access for the landowners in the area until such time as we have this thing rectified. We need to get that done, Steve, probably sooner rather than later, and then we just work through the process. Questions for Darren or comments?
Nothing. I guess my suspicion is this bridge, you know, load postings has been used this way up until the point it broke. And I suspect that it will probably be even repaired, used as it is. I don't know if we have the ability to put some farm lane access or something to take the farm traffic away from this bridge in a way that you go to the landowners where this is being farmed, that you put it more to the east away from the bridge that we don't currently have. But that's a conversation to have with the farmers that are farming the either owned or rented land.
Well, and I just heard Steve say an important little word phrase there. It was about school buses and possibly being near the maximum or whatever. And it hadn't occurred to me about the other traffic that might be out there going over that bridge on a fix that would be near the maximum load, and certainly from a life, you know, safety risk would be a higher elevated risk.
I would assume any type of school bus would just be to go out to the water plant facility because there's no homes or anything on
right,
the
but still
west side of the bridge.
Okay.
Anything else?
No.
Darren, thank you. Steve, thanks for sticking around.
Thank you.
Looks like we lost Jerome Reworks. He said something to you, Leanne.
Yep.
I apologize to Jerome.
Thank you.
We moved him down in the agenda.
That's right.
To get that update.
Jerome wants me to apologize. He was due in court at 11, as well as were all the other staff members, so no one was available. He will work with Shelley to get rescheduled.
I'll call Jerome. That one's on me, us having the update that we had.